तिरुधेन्द्रिया प्राण मनो बुधिमुभारत स्थानत्राय परं प्राप्तं ब्रह्मभूताम् अविक्रियं।
The Muni sense organs, breath, mind, and intelligence were all restrained from material activities. And he was situated in a trance. Apart from the three, wakefulness, dream, and unconsciousness, having achieved a transcendental position qualitatively equal with the Supreme Absolute, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It appears that the Muni in whose hermitage the king entered was in yogic trance. The transcendental position is attained by three processes, namely the process of jnana, or theoretical knowledge of transcendence, the process of yoga, or factual realization of trance by manipulation of the physiological and psychological functions of the body, and the most approved process of bhakti yoga, or the engagement of the senses in the devotional service of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita also we have the information of the gradual development of perception from matter to a living entity. Our material mind and body develop from the living entity, the soul, and being influenced by the three qualities of matter, we forget our real identity. The jnana process theoretically speculates about the reality of the soul, but bhakti yoga factually engages the spirit soul in activities. The perception of matter is transcended to still subtler states of the senses. The senses are transcended to the subtler mind, and then to breathing activities, and gradually to intelligence. Beyond the intelligence, the living soul is realized by the mechanical activities of the yoga system, or practice of meditation restraining the senses, regulating the breathing system, and applying intelligence to rise to the transcendental position. This trance stops all material activities of the body. The king saw the Muni in that position. He also saw the Muni as follows. He's here in responding to the inquiry of the sages of Naimisaranya, who were very anxious to hear the glorious pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, knowing that simply by hearing submissively a revolution of consciousness takes place within one's life, not only individually, but the entire society can be transformed by this wonderful process of hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. The sages of Naimisaranya were performing a great yajna, but they understood that there is no greater yajna than the sankirtan of the Lord's names and glories. So they requested Suta Goswami to chant. They wanted to know what he had heard from Shukadeva Goswami on the bank of the holy river Ganges, at the time when Maharaj Parikshit, the great king of the earth, decided to fast until death for the last 7 days of his life. And they especially wanted to understand the story of how Maharaj Parikshit had made such a glorious decision when he was in the very prime of his life. So Śrūta Gosvāmī has been describing the glories of Maharaj Parīkṣit's birth, how the son of Abhimanyu and Uttara, his father, had been killed. He gave his life fighting for Krishna in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And we should know that if we give our life for Krishna, he will take care of everything else. Sometimes people are afraid that if I do too much for Krishna, what will happen to my family members? But one who has transcendental knowledge and faith understand that if we perform our duties to Krishna according to his instructions, he is the supreme controller of all controllers. The material energy and the spiritual energy are both acting effortlessly under his direction. Krishna says in Gita, Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Mokshayi Savimasachaha. Abandon all varieties of religion, just surrender to me. I shall protect you. And he says, do not fear. This is his promise to us. He will take care. Do not fear. We have nothing to fear for ourselves. We have nothing to fear for our loved ones. Because if we give our lives to Krishna, Krishna will do whatever is best for us and for everyone involved. We see in the life of Prahlad Maharaj, he simply remained faithful to Krishna consciousness. And his father was the greatest asura. He was performing activities which were casting him to deeper and deeper regions of hellish suffering. He was enjoying, at least he never really enjoyed, but he was trying to enjoy his senses at the expense of others. And his karma was inconceivable. We cannot even imagine what type of karma. He was killing Brahmins and drinking their blood. He was setting people's houses on fire. He was destroying yajñas. He was killing cows. He was doing everything terrible. But because Prahlad was faithful to the will of the Lord, his father was liberated by the mercy of the Lord. And not only that, but 10 generations in the past and 10 generations of the future of all Prahlad's ancestors and descendants were all liberated also. Because the Lord, when he favors his devotee, he naturally favors everyone in relationship to that devotee. And therefore, Krishna says, do not fear. Do not fear for yourself. Do not fear for anyone around you. I will protect you. And here's a wonderful example. Abhimanyu was the son of Arjuna. During the battlefield, the battle of Kurukshetra, the Kuru army arranged a particular formation which was strategically destroying the entire Pandava army. And unless someone somehow penetrated that formation, broke into it, the Pandavas would have definitely been annihilated. Arjuna was already way, way, way on the other side of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, fighting the Trigarthas. So they could not reach him. And the only person besides Arjuna who had the skill to penetrate this formation was Abhimanyu. But when he was requested, he told Yudhisthira and others that I know the process of getting in the formation, but I do not know the process of getting out. And anyone who's trapped in this formation is certain to be slain. So Bhima, Yudhisthira, and others, they promised, we will follow right behind you. And you go in and we will go in with you. And if all of us get in that formation, they will not be able to harm. So Abhimanyu understood that this was a risk of his life. There was actually very little chance that he was going to be able to get out alive, and he knew that. But still, he didn't mind, because this war was being fought for Krishna. Arjuna, his father, Yudhisthira, his uncle, they were fighting this war on behalf of Krishna. And as the servant of the servant of the Lord, he didn't mind living or dying if it was to fulfill the desire of Krishna according to his duty. His occupation was a warrior. He had faith. He had nothing to fear. So he entered into the formation very gallantly. And he was only a child. He was only in his teenage years. And he penetrated. And the Kurus, very powerful, very clever, they closed the formation as soon as he entered, so nobody else could possibly get in. It was impossible. And then he fought. He was against all odds. A large assembly of great Maharatis all challenged him together. And he fought in such a way that even the Maharatis, who were his opponents, were glorifying his skills and his courage, his enthusiasm. And he was actually defeating all of them for some time. But it was impossible. After some time, because he was outnumbered, it was such a cheating, unfair condition that he became tired, and ultimately he was killed. But of course, as we were speaking last night about the son of Srivas Thakur, he died in the kirtan of the Lord. He went back home, back to Godhead. There's nothing wrong with dying in this way. To enter into eternal life is the ultimate goal. This life only lasts for some few years. And if we can attain eternal consciousness in the Leela of the Lord within these 3 years, that is the greatest purpose of life. If you just try to enjoy life for these few years we're in this body and waste the opportunity to go back to Godhead, is a very unfortunate loss. So Abhimanyu went back to Godhead. He died completely immersed in serving the Lord. There's no harm in that. And Mahabharata describes very elaborately this great history of the events that took place after this. Ultimately, Arjuna took revenge on Jayadratha, who arranged this killing of Abhimanyu. And then later on, Drona was killed by Dhrishtadyumna, and Ashwatthama, his son, wanted to get revenge. He wanted to destroy all descendants of the Pandavas. So Abhimanyu is dead. But when he died, his wife Uttara was pregnant, carrying a child. So one may think, who's going to take care of the child when the father is dead? This is a material conception, but it's a responsible conception. But with transcendental vision, we understood, because Abhimanyu was a devotee who was willing to risk everything to surrender to Krishna, Krishna is going to take care of the child. It is obvious. Obviously, that child in the womb was dear to Abhimanyu. So why dear to Arjuna also, grandfather? Why would Krishna not take care? He's the supreme controller. He will never break his promise. Do not fear. So Ashwatthama threw this Brahmastra at the child in the womb who was helpless. And Krishna, who is always true to his promise, Konteya pratijanehi name bhakta pranashyati, responded to the calls of Uttara, the mother, and he appeared within the womb and protected the child. So Suta Goswami is describing this glorious, glorious event. And through it we should understand, with faith, what Srila Rupa Goswami has said. Rupa Goswami said, make your life an offering to Krishna. Don't be afraid. Krishna will give you the best. He will give you himself. There's nothing greater than that. We should have no hesitation. We should not have material considerations, trying to, what about this and what about this and what about this. We have to be responsible, we have to be intelligent to serve Krishna the best way. But at the same time, we have to know that when we make our life an offering to Krishna, Krishna becomes so pleased. If we do it in a responsible fashion, he will definitely compensate everything. Krishna says in Gita that for one who is my devotee, who sacrifices for me, I will protect what that devotee has and I will carry what he doesn't have. Whatever shortcomings, Krishna can make it up. And whatever you have, Krishna will protect if you surrender. So throughout the Shastras, this is given, this word. So why, when the human lives are ticking second by second, moment by moment, why should we have so many fears and considerations? We should just trust Krishna and do everything within our power to serve Krishna. And that is why we hear the scriptures. That is why these wonderful stories are given, to give us this faith, this courage, so that our weak-heartedness will be dissolved through transcendental sound vibration. Then he explains how after Maharaj Parikshit was born, how there was such wonderful, wonderful ceremony, and how Maharaj Parikshit gradually grew up in pure devotion to the Lord, always looking for that Krishna who he saw in the womb of his mother. He was completely engrossed in worshipping deities and making offerings. He didn't care about play with other children, all games. He was just concerned with bhakti from his childhood, very rare child. And when he grew up and was coronated as king after Yudhisthira, Arjuna, Bhima, Nakula, Sahadev retired, went to the Himalayas, eventually back to Godhead, he became such a king, completely ruled according to religious principles. Everything he did was in the service of the Lord. He didn't just send ambassadors and ministers and secretaries of state to different countries. He personally went on his chariot with his sword to personally make sure that if there was any injustice to the innocent citizens, he would deal with them. And when he saw the cow and the bull being mistreated by Kali personified in the rogue, in the disguise of a king, he became so angry that he was about to destroy him immediately. This is justice. Not going through courts and getting advocates and appeals and juries and all this, what they do today. This is because the leaders of the state have no discrimination anymore. Maharaj Parikshit, he had discrimination. He was a man of God. He could understand immediately, guilty or not guilty. And if you're guilty, finished. And if you're not guilty, he would give you all protection. Quick justice is justice. So, Kali personified, the greatest power of Maya surrendered at the feet of Maharaj Parikshit. What kind of king was he? But it was the Lord's will that Kali Yuga begin, because that is part of his process of creation. There are these four yugas, Satya Yuga, the golden age of religion, Treta Yuga, where one-fourth of that principle is decreased, Dwapara Yuga, where half the population becomes irreligious. Kali Yuga, at the very beginning, hardly a quarter of the population have any religious feelings. And as this age goes on, it becomes less and less and less. At the end of Kali Yuga, Sri Kalki Avatar comes. He exterminates all of the wicked people. And Satya Yuga again begins. So this four yugas in cycle is called a Divya Yuga. And this goes on. There are 71 Divya Yugas in one, in a life of one Manu. There are 14 Manus. That means 1,000 Divya Yugas. That equals one day of Brahma. Approximately 4,320,000,000 years is one day of Brahma. And then he goes to sleep for 4,320,000 years. During that time, the whole universe up to the higher, beyond Swargaloka, are just merged in water. Everyone is sleeping in the body of Lord Vishnu. And then Lord Brahma wakes up, and then all the spirit souls who are still conditioned to material enjoyment enter into the various species of the 8,400,000 species to resume their karmic actions and reactions. So this is the will of the Lord that these yuga cycles continue. And Kali Yuga is very important yuga, because if Kali does not come, then the Yuga Avatar does not come. The Kali Yuga Avatar is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He comes as the most merciful incarnation. He comes in every Kali Yuga. Once in a day of Brahma, he comes, the original Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, comes to taste the sweetness of Srimati Radharani. But in every Kali Yuga, Chirodakshai Vishnu incarnates as Lord Chaitanya, the Yuga Avatar, to spread the glories of the Harinam Sankirtan movement. So therefore, and he's always the most munificent of all incarnations. So we should understand that the coming of Kali is actually serving the Lord's purpose, to once and for all give the opportunity for people to just chant Hare Krishna and go back to Godhead. So even the worst, most terrible situations of this world are actually very wonderfully being orchestrated to serve the purpose of the Lord, and whose only purpose is to show love and mercy to all living beings. So Kali Yuga was meant to come, and it simply could not enter the world as long as Maharaj Parikshit was living, because he was too religious. So Krishna personally devised a plan in order to remove Maharaj Parikshit, to send him back to Godhead, to bring in Kali, to set the stage for Patita Pavan Avatar, Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki! The great sages worship Kali Yuga. The age of quarrel and hypocrisy. The great sages, their mood is always that they want cooperation and harmony, love and trust. So why they worship Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel and hypocrisy? Similar, we see Narada Muni, he was a great sage. He was actually preaching to Kamsa in such a way to make him very disturbed, so he would go and start killing everyone, because he knew that would just make Krishna appear and do more wonderful leelas for the whole world to see. So Narada was very, people cannot understand sometimes why he was telling all things about Krishna to Kamsa. Why didn't he just keep it secret? Because he wanted Kamsa to do more and more atrocities to speed up Krishna's deliverance of all living beings, to perform his wonderful pastimes. So Krishna arranged this mysterious pastime where Maharaj Parikshit was in the forest and he became very thirsty. And although he was such a great soul that he was actually beyond hunger and thirst, and even if one does feel hunger and thirst, a devotee is tatiksha. Tatiksha vakarunaka suhrada saravadehinam. He's tolerant. He's compassionate. He's self-controlled. He's merciful to others. These are the signs of a sadhu. Who is a greater sadhu than Maharaj Parikshit? He was truly a sadhu. Even though he was wearing a big crown and beautiful jewels, and he lived in a big palace, he had wife and everything, he was a sadhu because he had spiritual qualities. The Shastras does not say a sadhu is a way of dress or a way of hairstyle or a particular economic lifestyle. Tatikshiva karunaka suradam saravadehinam ajata satravasada sadhu sadhava sadhu bhushanam. A sadhu is one who is tolerant, a one who is merciful, one who is a friend to all living beings, one who is self-controlled, one who is always remembering Krishna. He is sadhu, whether he's king or whether he's mendicant or anything in between. One, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked, who is a Vaishnava? He was speaking to the residents of Kulinagram. Most of them were Grihastas. He didn't say you give up your home. He said a Vaishnava is one who is always chanting the holy names of Krishna, always remembering Krishna, and living by the principles of devotion. That is a sadhu. That is a Vaishnava. So, why someone who was the embodiment of tolerance and kindness, he forgave Kali. Kali was killing cows, destroying the legs of religion and the whole society. And Parikshit Maharaj was such a magnanimous soul, he forgave him. Not only did he forgive him, but he gave him place to live. In fact, he gave Kali his own, he gave him a portion of his own kingdom, because a king must maintain everybody fairly. He said, wherever there is illicit sex, wherever there is intoxication, wherever there is gambling, wherever there is the eating of meat or slaughtering of animals, and wherever there is greedy hoarding of wealth, those five places, Kali, that is your kingdom. You could reside there. So Kali has a lot of homes at this particular time in history. He practically rules the whole world. But we shouldn't let him in our temple. We have to be very pure and very cooperative, because as soon as he enters, quarrel and hypocrisy comes in. And then all faith in God is lost. So he gave, Maharaj Parikshit gave Kali a place. He was such a tolerant person. So how is it that such a magnanimous soul, who was so merciful to all, he became so overcome with thirst? And when he came into this hermit, he couldn't find any water. He was searching everywhere for some well or some lake or some pond of water. In those days, everything was pure because the leader was pure. He was teaching people Krishna consciousness. Their hearts were pure. Therefore, the whole world was pure. You can go to any little pond of water and drink it, because the water was all pure. There was no contaminations. Anywhere, anything. It was just so natural. Now, you drink water in the ponds and
You get typhoid, dysentery, all sorts of other diseases, amoebic, dysenteries, and so many other things. Now you have to go buy Bisleri water just to survive, practically, or get all sorts of filtration systems. But in those days, any water you would see, you would just drink it. No problem, because the world was pure. The hearts of people were pure. So he was looking for water, but there was no water. So he came into the hermitage of Samik Rishi. And it describes here that this Samik Rishi was a very great yogi. And he was meditating on the Paramatma within his heart through the yogic process of asana, pranayam, dhyan, yama, niyama. He followed these principles perfectly. He was a real yogi. He was sitting with his back straight, his matted hair scattered. He had the skin, he was covered by the skin of a stag. And he was completely away from external consciousness. His mind was so deeply within his own inner realizations of the soul. So Maharaj Parikshit asked him for water. But he didn't even know Maharaj Parikshit was there. He was in another world. He was in the spiritual world. So Maharaj Parikshit again requested, "I am thirsty. I am the king. I am a guest. You should greet me. Any guest that comes to your house, it is the Vedic custom. You must give him a sitting place, give him some water, give him some food, some nice sweet words." In fact, it is said in the Shastra, even if the person is your enemy, if he comes to your home, you should treat him so nicely that he forgets that you're his enemy. Then when he leaves your home, then he remembers again. That is the Vedic custom. In fact, if you treat him so nice, he may not be your enemy anymore. But one who mistreats a guest that comes to their home, according to fifth canto of Bhagavatam, there are specific hellish planets for people who make those offenses. So we should be careful. It's one of the foremost duties of grihasthas to make sure that guests are accommodated with great hospitality. And Maharaj and this great Brahmin, he was a grihastha. He had a son, very infamous son, Sringi. So why, when Parikshit Maharaj came, he didn't do anything to greet him? Because he was in samadhi. He had no external consciousness. So this was obvious to a great saint like Maharaj Parikshit. But the Lord wanted Kali Yuga to begin. And he wanted to serve many purposes at the same time. When Krishna wants to do something, so many functions become fulfilled through any one of his activities. On one hand, he wanted to begin Kali Yuga. On another hand, he wanted to pave the way for the descent of the Yuga Avatar, Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. On the other hand, he wanted to have Srimad Bhagavatam spoken by Shukadev Goswami, because it is said in Bhagavatam that after Krishna left the planet, he descended in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam, the spotless Purana. This is all the arrangement of Krishna to have Srimad Bhagavatam manifested to the world. And he also wanted to glorify for all time the example of Maharaj Parikshit. How he was willing to accept even the most terrible, terrible crisis in life that a person could possibly experience in perfect Krishna consciousness and peace of mind and faith in God. So it was Krishna within the heart of Maharaj Parikshit that covered him not by Mahamaya, but by Yogamaya. What is the difference between Mahamaya and Yogamaya? Mahamaya causes us to forget reality for the purpose of taking us away from Krishna. And yoga means to connect, to bring together again. Yoga maya is to put a person in illusion, to give a person a misconception of reality, perhaps, for the purpose of bringing one closer to Krishna, to serve the very purpose of Krishna, yoga maya. So Maharaj Parikshit was a great devotee. Krishna says in Gita that my devotees are always protected. Mahatmanas tu mam bharata daivim prakriti mashita bhajantya nanya manaso gyatva bhutatim abhyayam. That those great souls, they are always under my divine nature, yoga maya. So Krishna took away his intelligence. Sarvasya chaham hridishani vishto matasmitir jnanam apohanam cha. Vidaishta sarveraham eva vedyo vedantakrit veda vedeva chaham. Krishna is the source of remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness for everyone. For the pure souls who are completely Krishna conscious, and for the materialistic people trying to enjoy through various materialistic exploitative processes in this world. Krishna is giving everyone a particular type of remembrance, forgetfulness, and knowledge to fulfill their desires. But a devotee's only desire is to fulfill Krishna's desire. He does not have his own desire. This is the nature of a pure devotee. Krishna, I am yours. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he sang like this. He was a magistrate. He had 10 children. He had a nice house in Godramdweep, Jagannath Puri, so many places. Manaso deho geho jokichu mora arpilum duaupadi nanda kishore. My Lord, my body, my wealth, my home, my family, my everything, it is yours. It is all meant for your service. And Bhaktivinoda never lost anything. He had everything because everything was for Krishna. Rupa Goswami says, whatever you have, if you give to Krishna, don't be afraid. Krishna will give you. He will give everything. The best. He will give himself. So Maharaj Parikshit was such a devotee, of such a stature. And Krishna, from within his heart, understood that his purpose is my purpose. So I will help him fulfill his purpose, which is to fulfill my purpose, by putting him in complete illusion. And he became so thirsty, he couldn't tolerate it. The most tolerant person became intolerant. And when the sage, the most intelligent person, he couldn't even see that this sage was in samadhi, the most intelligent man became completely unintelligent. And the most forgiving, accommodating person, who even forgave and accommodated Kali, couldn't accommodate or forgive one of the greatest sages on earth. Krishna just took away all of his good qualities and just made him just like an ordinary man who was foolish, who couldn't control his senses, and who couldn't even control his anger. And he was so much offended by this sage. A Vaishnava is not offended, but he was offended. How is this possible? Because it was Krishna's desire. And then with his arrow, he found the dead corpse of a serpent, and he placed it on the sage's body like a garland. Sap mala. Serpent mala. Put on there. And he left. But after he left, he was thinking, as yoga maya started coming away from him by Krishna's grace, he was thinking, what did I do? But it was too late. Because Sringi, the son of Samikrishi, already had heard from his friends that this is what this king has done to your father. And he was a Brahmin. This is also very instructive, because we know that when Krishna wanted to let Kali into the world, he did it through a Brahmin. In fact, in the Puranas it is explained that even Rakshasas take birth in Brahmin families in the age of Kali just to disrupt society. So Sringi, son of a Brahmin who was obviously not qualified but had power of Brahmin, he became very angry. I will teach this king a good lesson. He sipped the water. He told his friends, you watch and see what I do. I declare today that after 7 days, this Maharaj Parikshit will be killed by being bitten by a snake bird. And when this news came to Maharaj Parikshit, he understood that this is all the will of the Lord. He was not attached. He was not attached to his family. He was not attached to his palace. He was not attached to his power. He was not attached to his beauty and his youth. He was not even attached to his life. He was only attached to Krishna. What an example. And during those last 7 days, what did he do? He went to the bank of the Ganges and he approached the great sages and said, please tell me about Krishna. Let me leave this world hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. So all the sages of the whole universe descended to this place. It is still there. Many of you may have been there. On the bank of the Ganges, there's a banyan tree. It's near, not far from Meerut in North India, between Rishikesh and Delhi. The place is called Shukada, I believe. And that is where Maharaj Parikshit vowed, I will not eat, I will not sleep. I will simply hear the glories of the Lord for 7 days. And all the great sages came, Narada, Parasara Muni, Bhardraj Muni, Janmajaya Muni, Vedavyas, Gautam Rishi. They all came from wherever they were dwelling. And they were all trying to decide who should speak to Maharaj Parikshit on behalf of all the great rishis of the world. And at that time, the 16-year-old child, Shukadev, entered into the assembly. Shukadev was in the womb of his mother for 12 years. He was a Brahmin liberated soul. But upon hearing the glories of the Lord, he came out. And after the same time, Vedavyas instructed him in Srimad Bhagavatam. So Shukadev Goswami was a proper detached person in parampara. He didn't even wear clothes. But his reason for not wearing clothes was simply that he just had no connection with the external world. He was just completely immersed in Krishna. So when he came, all of the great sages and rishis gave him the Vyasasan to sit on. And Maharaj Parikshit inquired submissively, what is the supreme occupation for all humanity? What is the essence of all religions? What is the duty of a man about to die? And in response to these questions, Shukadeva Goswami spoke the spotless Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam. So we find here that the Lord served his purpose. And Maharaj Parikshit perfected his life in 7 days simply by submissively hearing the narrations of the Lord's teachings and pastimes. Even the most difficult crises in life, Maharaj Parikshit accepted as the Lord's mercy. if he had even the slightest tinge of false ego in him. He would have been, why Krishna did that to me? Why he made me so thirsty? Why he made me offend this Brahmin? Why he made me do this Vaishnava aparad? I didn't have any intention to do it. And why this Sringi? Why for such a small thing as putting a snake on someone, he cursed me to die. It was a dead snake. It was harmless. It was completely unfair. Someone does something like that to your father, little insult, you curse him to die? Sringi was also completely infatuated by Maya. Maharaj Parikshit, for that, he could have arrested Sringi and put him in prison. Accepted Krishna speaking through Sringi. He wants me to die. This is very nice. This is a good opportunity to do some nice seva. What is the seva? To be an example for the world to follow. So Maharaj Parikshit saw everything as Krishna's mercy. He was born in the most wonderful spiritual way by the mercy of the Lord. He lived his life in the most merciful spiritual way in the mercy of the Lord. And he left this world in complete faith, dedication, and surrender to the Supreme Personality of God. He did not see this ultimate crisis of life as something bad. Sometimes we have crises. We have crises either with our mind or some family problem, or business problem, or there's some political problem. Anyway, everybody's so worried what to do, so much anxiety. Or sometimes in the Brahmachari Ashram, what problems they have here. But they think of problems. So the grihasthas, they think, what problem could these Brahmacharis have? They don't have any bills to pay. They don't have any competing businessmen trying to destroy everything they've given their life to establish through industry, business. They're not worried about the political leaders. They don't have to pay taxes. Taxes are always coming, and the tax department can raid us at any minute. All these things we're worried about. And we have this wife. We don't know what she wants next. We have this husband, we don't know what he's doing, and so many anxieties for grihasthas. Brahmacharis, you look at them, what is their problems? But somehow or other, they think of problems. I can't even think of any problems. What problems? But still they come to me all the time with problems. Somebody stole the Mahaprasad, something like that. It's a big problem. Because somehow or other your mind makes everything big. Even the littlest things can become impossible if you forget Krishna. Somebody used my gumsha. These are the kind of social problems brahmacharis have. Anyways, the world is full of problems, but Maharaj Parikshit, he was cursed to die. Who was going to take over the kingdom? He had not trained anyone yet to do it. Sometimes, business people, when they start getting in their 50s or 60s, they start training someone to take over their business. He was still a young man. He didn't train anyone. The kingdom had to have another king. What about his wife and his children and everybody else? Who was going to take care of them? And what about his own life? When you're young and you have everything, you want to live. It is natural. He was going to die. And not just an ordinary death, but being bit by a snake bird. Very terrible death. And snake birds bite you, their venom is so hot, your body just goes into fire. So, have you ever had a crisis like this? Nothing. But we become so disturbed and so much anxiety ridden. We start blaming everybody. Why like this and why he did like this? It's not fair. It's not justice. Why bad things happen to good people like me? God is either he's not all pervading or he's making some mistake, but why I have to suffer like this? In this way there's so many anxieties, so many blaming, so many justifications. But Maharaj Parikshit just, Krishna, whatever you desire. Bhaktivinod said, if you want to kill me, if you want to protect me, any way you like to deal with me, I am your servant. Servant does not tell the master, do like this. Servant is simply ready to follow the master's desire. Whether he wants me in this body or another body, Krishna will arrange. Nothing to fear. Therefore, bhajahure mana srinandanandana abhaya charanaravindare. The devotee is completely fearless because he has faith in the mercy of Krishna. He's not trying to make all his own arrangements. He simply accepts Krishna's arrangement. So when Maharaj Parikshit was cursed to die in 7 days, he didn't retaliate against Sringi, even though he was a Kshatriya. He simply went to Shukadev Goswami's lotus feet and it said that I am most fortunate. Krishna has given me this merciful warning and I have come to you to hear and chant the glories of the Lord. Because that's all we have. Ultimately all we have is Krishna. Everything else, for some time, all of our bodies, our relations, our properties, it's just passing. It's like passing. The soul is transmigrating birth after birth and after birth, and whatever we attain in one birth, it's just coming and going. It's not ours. Ultimately, all we have is Krishna. And to realize that and remember Krishna is the ultimate fortune. Therefore, the Shastras tell us, what is the greatest wealth? The greatest wealth is to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. The greatest wealth is the opportunity to serve Krishna and to be in the association of his devotees. Everything else is temporary. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained in one beautiful discourse, he said, everything in this world is illusory except Krishna and Krishna's name and Krishna's devotees. Therefore, that's all we really ever have. So Maharaj Parikshit went to the bank of Ganga where there was Krishna's devotees, where there was Krishna's name and Krishna manifesting through wonderful pastimes and teachings. And in this way he showed the whole world the real value of human life and the goal of all existence, to always remember Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Is there any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, it has been said that Srimad Bhagavatam is Amal Puranam. It's a spotless scripture. I'm not able to understand this. In all the stories of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the beginning, some material desire or something or the other comes into the picture. But the end, unmotivated, uninterrupted loving services comes up and we get a very good realization out of it. So finally, the end picture comes over there. This is the loving, unmotivated, uninterrupted services, pure devotional service, we get it out of it. But in some of the stories in Srimad Bhagavatam, there are some stories like the demigods, they are appearing to Lord Vishnu, they are coming to Lord Vishnu for some material benefits. And then when they see Lord Vishnu, they offer very wonderful prayers to Lord Vishnu. And after offering those prayers also, their unmotivated, uninterrupted services doesn't come into the picture. They just want to have that material gains.
Very well. Anivoda Prabhu ki.
So, although they offer, even Lord Vishnu comes in front of them, they offer good prayers to them, and it's a wonderful prayers. But after even praying such a wonderful prayers also, they don't have that desire to have a very unmotivated motivated service. They just want to keep that material desire itself, and just wanted to satisfy those material desires. Then why this type of a sketches come to Srimad Bhagavatam when the end result should be unmotivated, uninterrupted services to Krishna? So why this thing is coming into Bhagavatam? And I could not understand that.
Because through the process of seeing the nature of material desire, also the conclusion is that we achieve unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service. It may be that the demigods pray to the Lord to appear, and they may have some mixed devotional sentiments. Obviously, they're great devotees, all of them, but they also have some desire for the continuation of their sense gratification. And various demigods are of various levels of consciousness. Some of them, they really have no material desires. They just know that this is their service. And to protect their abode and to protect their service is their devotional service. Just like if someone comes to try to take our temple away, are we going to say, yes, yes, take it? Or are we going to fight to protect it for the service of Krishna? Which one? It is our duty to fight for the service of Krishna. Arjuna was told to fight the war of Kurukshetra, even though he didn't even have any desire to do so, because Krishna wanted he and his brothers to rule the earth. That was their service. And someone tried to take it away, you have to fight for it, because it is my service. Huh? So some of the demigods, they are in charge of certain affairs of this universe, and they have their abodes, which is their place of orchestrating the wind and the fire and everything. So it's their service to Krishna. And when demons are coming to try to exploit and take what they're using in Krishna's service for their own sense gratification, the demigods appeal to Krishna to help. So many of those demigods, they're not materialistic. They're actually appealing to Krishna because they understand he is their only shelter. And they want to do it for him. Also, some of the demigods are attached. They know that their abode is actually their headquarters for devotional service to Krishna. They're mixed. The demons are taking their service to Krishna away. They're disturbing the service to Krishna. So therefore, they're praying to Krishna to protect that service, which is important for all living entities, that it be performed. But at the same time, they're attached to the facilities of that service. So they have mixed desires. So we should understand that the demigods are not just materialistic people. They're devotees. Some are pure devotees, some are mixed devotees. But they're all devotees. And when the demons interfere with their devotional service, they pray to Krishna to help. And Krishna descends. But when Krishna descends, in all these wonderful narrations of Bhagavatam, he always establishes pure devotional service. And the crux of the Bhagavatam is to show the nature of pure devotees. Just like the story of Indra and Vritasura. Although Indra may have had apparently some material desires, and through him the Lord appeared, through his prayers and so forth. And when he was fighting Vritasura,
Vitrasura was the pure devotee.
And what we get out of that, the conclusion of that story, is the unbelievable, pure, unalloyed devotion of a demon named Vritrasura, who in his previous life was Maharaj Chichaketu. So we find the essence of the theme and the conclusion of every story of Bhagavatam is pure, unalloyed devotional service. Although it might also, at times, in the process of explaining that, expose various material motivations. But its conclusion, its theme, and its purpose is to simply amplify the unalloyed qualities of pure devotion. When we see how Indra was afraid and Vritrasura was fearless, Indra's material attachments only amplified and further instructed us in the unbelievable purity of Vritrasura's devotion. So Krishna uses all of these even materialistic situations to only further encourage the ultimate truth of pure devotion. Every story of Bhagavatam culminates in pure devotion. And when it culminates in pure devotion, that means every stage up to that point is only meant to bring us to pure devotion. Therefore, every syllable of Srimad Bhagavatam is completely pure and can bring us the ultimate goal of life if we hear it submissively. Because every syllable of the Bhagavatam is exclusively meant to awaken pure devotional service in our hearts. Does that answer your question?
Maharaj, talking about the eighth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where the Mandara mountain and the demigods wanted to have that nectar, they didn't want to get that nectar for pure devotion. They just wanted to become eternal. So in that, what the story comes at?
That various demigods also may have had various reasons for wanting the nectar. Some may be pure devotees who want the nectar. Just like at the Sunday feast, you also drink nectar. Drink? Like, to get strength for your devotional service. Right? Others may have wanted, but what was the conclusion? The conclusion is the Lord showed his wonderful lila at every stage. And by hearing of the Lord's lila, one can attain pure devotional service. How he appeared as Kurma Rupa. Anyone who hears this story becomes a pure devotee. In fact, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the first deity he gave Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati to worship when he was a little child was a deity of Kurmadev. Not Radha Krishna. He first gave him Kurma. And he taught him all the ways of worshipping Kurma. What do you want? Because Kurma is like the foundation, basis, by which we build our devotional service. So all of these great avatars of the Lord, if we understand through the proper authorities, each one of them, by hearing their glories and understanding their mercy, will achieve pure devotional service. So, Bhagavatam is spotless Purana. Does that answer your question? And as far as the demigods drinking nectar, through this story, Krishna appeared as Mohini Murti. Through this story, even before that, Vishnu appeared and married Lakshmi. Through this story, Adhokshaja Vishnu appeared in so many ways to accommodate this wonderful lila. And ultimately, through this story, Lord Vamanadeva appears. And what is the culmination? Bali Maharaj surrenders everything in pure unalloyed devotion to the Supreme Lord. Any other questions?
Maharaj, you mentioned in the lecture that...
Did you want to say something, Srinathji?
Actually, his first question was something which I wanted to comment on and ask. When Lord Shiva helps his disciple to fight against Krishna, then it is proven that Krishna is the Bhagavan Swayam, because the Bhagavatam repeatedly shows that the demigods get defeated and it's Krishna only who is supreme. Therefore, it's better to concentrate on Krishna. Because as a Mayavadi, we used to worship Shiva as the supreme. But Prabhupada used to always say that Krishna is the Bhagavan Swayam. Read Bhagavatam. The Mayavadis never read Bhagavatam, because it's proven there that Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam. That's the important thing. And if Shiva is a Mahadev, the first topmost Dev, the rest of the Devas have no position against Krishna. Hari Bol.
Hari Bol. Very good. Yes?
Maharaj, you mentioned in the lecture that at the end of Brahma's day, all living entities were still not pure. They are put into the body of Mahavishnu. So they lie there just like
not
that.
Not Mahavishnu. The localized Vishnu within the universe. At the end of Brahma's life, they enter Mahavishnu. At the end of his day, they enter into the Virat Purusha, localized Vishnu within that universe.
So they lie there for more than 4 billion years. But when we explain the impersonal concept, that impersonal liberation is not permanent, because when a living entity merges into the Brahma Jyoti, he can fall from there and then they fall for social activity. So how do we explain the 2 points? Because here also a living entity is lying for so many billions of years, and at the end of Brahma's life even more.
If you go to the Brahma Jyoti, generally it's far longer than billions of years, maybe trillions and quadrillions of years. The Brahma Jyoti is beyond time. But sometime it is inevitable that the desire for loving relationships will awaken in your heart. And then you will either, if you have no information of Vaikuntha, then you have to come back to this material world. But the living entities are simply cast into deep sleep, covered by their subtle bodies. And they are awakened only by the will of the Lord when Brahma awakens. There is no chance for them awakening until.
Second thing, Maharaj, how many kind of devastations are there? There is one devastation at the end of every Kali Yuga. There is one devastation.
There is a partial devastation after each Manu. There's 14 Manus in every day of Brahma. A Manu lives something like 3 million some years. No, 3 billion. Yeah, 3 million. Anyways, the 71 Divya Yugas is one Manu. I think that's about 310 billion years, huh? Something like that. That's the life of one Manu. And after each Manu, there's a partial dissolution. And then after the day of Brahma, there is a greater partial dissolution. And then after the life of Brahma, there is total dissolution.
What about at the end of Kali Yuga also, there is when Kalki avatar comes and kills the...
It's not considered a dissolution. Just Kalki avatar's mercy. It's a dissolution of the demons. But it's not dissolution of the planets. Yes?
Maharaj, in the lecture you mentioned that Sarva Dharman Parityajya, that verse, it means that you leave all kind of religions or duties, and only duty of the living being is to remember, is to serve, and to completely surrender to Krishna. So, is it not a duty of a husband to look after his wife, or parents to look after their children, or the children to look after their parents? If everybody starts running to serve Krishna...
If it's done in Krishna consciousness, it's your duty. If it's not done in Krishna consciousness, it is sinful rascaldom.
Yes, both kind of duties can go side by side.
Yes, if it is done in Krishna consciousness. It is your duty. It is your duty if you are a husband. You must take care of your wife. If you don't, you are a sinful rascal. Unless Krishna specifically gives you another instruction. But material relationships without Krishna consciousness is not in any way the duty of a human being. It is the karmakandi duty. We are not concerned with that. Anything that is not centered in Krishna, we have no concern for. Does that answer your question?
Very well. Maharaj, during the lecture you said that Krishna appeared during the Kali Yuga as the Yuga Avatar, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And at the end of the Kali Yuga, as Kali Yuga is ending, he'll appear as Kalki Avatar. So, within the same Yuga, he's appearing twice. So, is there some difference between Yuga Avatar and Kalki Avatar, or don't know how to...
Yuga Avatar is the avatar that establishes the Yuga Dharma. The Yuga Dharma of Kali Yuga is Kalo... Kalera dosani de rajan asti hita mahan kirtanat eva krishnasya mukta sangha paramrajat. The congregational chanting of Krishna's name is the Yuga Dharma. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the only Yuga avatar. Kalki is not Yuga avatar. He is a Leela avatar. There is a difference. Leela avatar comes for a particular mission. Yuga avatar establishes the religion of the age. Kalki establishes, he doesn't preach philosophy. Because at the time of the end of Kali Yuga, people are not philosophical. He doesn't even preach Harinam Sankirtan, because nobody even wants to listen to that. His preaching is his sword. He just cuts everyone's heads off. Except the devotees. There's a few devotees, but they're hiding in caves. Because it describes the atheistic people become so wicked that there's no yajna, no rain. The whole world is just a vast desert. People are just hunting each other and they kill each other. They hunt the Vaishnavas to eat them, drink their blood. So the devotees are hiding. This is the end of Kali Yuga. So Kalki comes and he just, on his beautiful horse, his elegant form, he just severs everyone's heads. And they get liberation. That is their good fortune. That's his preaching. And then Satya Yuga begins, the age of religion. Is there any other questions? Yes.
Please explain in brief the essence of particular this sloka which we learned today.
The essence of this sloka is about the mystic yoga process, how Maharaj Parikshit came across Samik Rishi. The Muni's sense organs, breath, mind, intelligence were all restrained from material activities, and he was situated in a trance apart from the three, wakefulness, dream, and unconsciousness, having achieved the transcendental position qualitatively equal with the Supreme Absolute. The essence of the sloka is that Samik Rishi was so much immersed in samadhi that he had no consciousness of the external world. And because of this situation, total absorption within, he was not able to properly receive Maharaj Parikshit. And thus Maharaj Parikshit, under the influence of the Lord's personal energy, was deluded and became angry with the sage. And this essence of this sloka
is because of the sage's transcendental condition of consciousness, he invoked Maharaj Parikshit to commit an offense which would ultimately cause a curse upon him, which would be the actual cause of the speaking of Srimad Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj in the bank of the Ganges. So every one of these verses is just leading up to the speaking of Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit. That is the essence, to understand that. It's all the will of the Lord. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.